This is Fresh Air. As you write out your check to the IRS, consider this. You're not the only one who thinks they're paying too much. Today's tax system is skewed heavily in favor of the privileged, and the middle class is getting soaked, according to a new book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Donald Bartlett and James Steele. They're investigative reporters with the Philadelphia Inquirer and co-authors of the bestseller America, What Went Wrong? In their new book, America, Who Really Pays the Taxes?, Bartlett and Steele say we presumably have a progressive tax system, a tax built on the belief that as income rises, so should the rate at which it is taxed. But our system isn't nearly as progressive as it used to be. In fact, if you have a feeling that you're paying taxes at a higher rate than a lot of millionaires, you're probably right. Between 1971 and 91, according to Bartlett and Steele, the combined Social Security and income taxes paid by the average family in America shot up by 329%. By contrast, the combined tax bills of millionaires declined 34%.
In terms of total dollars, the people at the top pay the largest amount because they have the most dollars. But what we're talking about is how much money a family or an individual has left over after they pay those taxes. And when you look at it in those terms, middle America is being hammered as never before in this century. And to go back even further, if you go back to the 1950s and you look at the federal income tax, Social Security tax, and state and local income taxes, there weren't many states or local governments that had those at the time. Philadelphia did. But if you look at just those four taxes, the average family paid about 10% of its earnings in those taxes. You come forward to today, and that figure is 24%. And that doesn't include real estate taxes, local and state sales taxes, excise taxes, personal property taxes, per capita taxes. So the average family is up there around 30%, maybe even more in some cases, of their money going to pay these taxes, leaving them less for, you know, rent, just the ordinary things, food, clothing. And also the other important aspect of this is when you go back to the 1950s, that income was earned basically by one person. Today it requires two working spouses to have that median family income.
Is there a particular income bracket that you think is paying a particularly disproportionate share of taxes?
Sure, it's anywhere up to about $75,000.
But what's happened also in this country, years ago when you had a true progressive tax system, people who made $100,000 paid at a lower rate really than somebody making $200,000, and on up the ladder it went. But basically anymore, everybody from about $250,000 on up is paying in the same category as someone who might be making $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 million a year. That's what's substantially different than the past.
Yeah, and then when everybody feels that they have an unfair tax burden that they're being asked to bear, then it's particularly easy for politicians to play on those feelings and make promises that they're maybe not even going to keep, or they're going to end up hurting us anyways in the long run.
That's precisely right, and that's what you see going on time and time again. One of the most fascinating things to us when we went back and looked at this whole issue of taxes, every time there's a tax debate, every time there's a tax bill, the same language comes out from the halls of Congress about what's going to happen. They say things like this: we're going to tax the rich. We're going to make sure companies pay their fair share. We're going to give the middle class a break. We're going to take care of the poor. We're going to close loopholes. All of this rhetoric comes out each time that happens. But each time they don't close all the loopholes. They don't apply that tax across the board. Inequities abound, but it's the process by which they try to assure everybody that everything's okay. You pay your fair share because we're doing the best we can to make sure we take care of the system. It's part of that reassuring salve to make sure basically the middle class people just simply don't rebel.
Why do we keep hearing the same rhetoric about easing the burden on the middle class when that never seems to exactly happen?
This gets down to the part that's what people want to hear. And that's what politicians want to give them. And that's part of that reassuring salve that keeps the system working. By the time it is apparent to people that that hasn't happened, another tax bill is coming down the line, which applies many of those same principles. Part of it is the complexity of taxes. Part of it is that people just simply don't know how to follow that issue. But part of it is the process to keep the system operating. Washington's greatest fear really is of a genuine tax revolt among people across the country who are very upset about what's happening, because that would destroy the entire system. The system is based largely on voluntary compliance. the fact that people believe enough people are paying their fair share, and therefore they will pay theirs. If enough people don't believe that, then the whole system collapses because the IRS simply couldn't keep up with the kind of avoidance that would then ensue.
What about the 1993 budget? Did that ease the burden on the middle class as Bill Clinton promised he would
try to do? That was a very modest increase on upper income groups, and that was basically the extent of that. It's working a little bit in terms of dealing with some of the deficit problems, but it is amazing in retrospect the kind of rhetoric that you saw about that bill at the time. You had people at the top who were complaining in Congress about that relatively small increase on people at the very top level. They said, this is class warfare. One of the most interesting things we came up with in searching this book, you go back through tax legislation in history, every time they're trying to raise rates at the top, they call that class warfare. But every time they want to cut rates at the top, the bill is invariably called tax reform.
My guests are journalists Donald Bartlett and James Steele, authors of the new book, America, Who Really Pays the Taxes? We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about inequities in the tax system with investigative reporters Donald Bartlett and James Steele. I want to clarify something with you. Often when people are very frustrated about the amount of taxes that they have to pay and the little amount of money that they're left with, their solution is, well, I don't want to pay this anymore. Let's cut the welfare program. Let's do away with special programs for the poor and for single mothers. And, I don't have the money to support that stuff. So what kind of answer do you give to people on that who are genuinely frustrated by the tax bills and just want to, stop supporting social programs?
This is another great case in which Congress feeds this to. Because, again, lawmakers in both parties play to that constituency, and it is really irresponsible. And you can put this in really very simple terms. The biggest expense out there, it's not food stamps, it's not welfare, it's the interest on the national debt.
So you're saying that we're not being soaked to support social service programs.
No.
That's not really what
that's
most
absolutely
of our taxes
right.
are going
in
to.
In fact, there's one. There's
so,
one.
So are you saying cutting back those programs isn't the solution to cutting back our taxes?
Well, if you want to cut spending, eliminate that deficit. Don't trim it. Don't try
but
to
how,
cut
how do you do
it.
That?
Eliminate it. You eliminate it with a progressive income tax.
And how would that help?
You
raise more revenue. And obviously spending has got to be cut, too, in certain areas. I mean, you just can't keep spending money.
Transfer alone since 86, from the Tax Reform Act of 86 to the nation's wealthiest families, will total at the end of this year $200 billion alone, just in that one small group since 1986.
You mean the nation's wealthiest families are paying $200 billion
less as a result of that act.
Mm-hmm.
As Everett Dirksen used to say, this is real money.
So your solution to the national debt would be to increase taxes on the truly very wealthy.
That would be one solution.
One solution.
That's part of it. You need a whole range of things, but that certainly is one factor.
Since we're talking about progressive taxes and the fairness of the tax system, Ross Perot was talking about taxes during the last presidential campaign. I believe you looked into his tax records. How much did he pay?
Well, we don't know how much he paid overall, but we do know, based on a financial disclosure statement, that he had somewhere between $18 million and roughly $87 million in income that was tax-free, no tax paid.
These are tax-exempt securities.
Tax-exempt securities.
Bonds issued by state and local governments. And in that sense, he's not...
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
No, this is perfectly legitimate.
And he's by no means unusual.
Nor is
he
unusual.
You have many, many wealthy people investing in that. And it also goes to the heart of that 86 debate where they made such a point, how they closed all loopholes. They left the biggest one, the longest-running one, the most sacred of the loopholes for the very wealthy, intact. You have roughly $44, $45 billion a year in interest income from those bonds that goes untaxed, and that overwhelmingly flows to the richest families in this country.
You say that America has two tax systems, one for the rich and powerful and one for everybody else. I think you've illustrated several of the things that led you to that conclusion. Are there other inequities you see in individual taxes that have led you to that conclusion?
Oh, they abound. There are so many here. I'm not sure. The one thing you can be sure of is if you're an ordinary person, you're not going to get your own tax law. Only very special people get those, but they do get them. They get the tax laws, especially tailor-made for very wealthy people, people with influence. Jim and I, for really light entertainment, read the Internal Revenue Code, and that's why we're considered weird, I think. When you read the code, it's really terrible language, but you go for a few pages, and then you'll find a paragraph that will just jump out at you, and you say, wow, what is this? And just listen to these words. Special rule for beneficiary of a trust. In the case of an individual who is a beneficiary of a trust which was established on December 7th, 1979, under the laws of a foreign jurisdiction and who was not a citizen or resident of the United States on the date the trust was established. This goes on for several paragraphs, and basically what it does is excuse that person from paying taxes that everyone else in this country must pay. And they do it, Congress does it, by not naming the person, but by saying a person who's a beneficiary of a trust established on December 7th, 1979. Now, somewhere out there, there is one person who meets that criteria and who does not have to pay taxes.
We'd like to actually make a personal appeal to any of your listeners. If any of them are out there who knows who this particular person is or is the person and would like to stand up and take credit for this remarkable tax break, we will assure them that they will get some publicity, because this is one of the great ones in the code. We pride ourselves on being able to decipher these things, but this is one on which we've failed, and we'd like to clear our record up on that.
And we did write to every member of the Ways and Means Committee, House Ways and Means Committee, every member of the Senate Finance Committee, and invited them to identify this person, but they, for some reason, all refused. And the typical response came from Richard Gephardt, who's been a longtime member of the Ways and Means Committee. He said, in response to your specific question relating to the identity of the unnamed individual who will benefit from a transition rule, special rule for beneficiary of trust, my office had no involvement in this matter. And that's our Congress at work.
It's tax time. I don't know if you've done your taxes yet or not, but this is the time when everybody has a personal decision to make. Are they going to do their best to, if not exactly cheat, to use the benefit of the doubt in their favor at every opportunity they can?
This is a growing problem with filing tax returns for a whole range of reasons. And really at the heart of it, too, and the reason the whole system is getting more and more out of control in some ways, is the complexity of the system is getting of such a mind-numbing quality that many people feel, even if they did fudge a little bit, that they probably won't be caught. And there's a certain amount of truth in that, unfortunately, which goes back to another one of these bits of the rhetoric that you see coming out of Congress every time they pass tax legislation. Every time there's a big tax bill, they say that they are simplifying the tax code.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And that goes to the heart. And the reason they say that, because they know everybody is so frustrated by this system,
yeah,
how complex it is, how difficult it is to maneuver, how hard it is to decipher many of the parts of it. And the complexity grows with each year. And it benefits, unfortunately, a very small number of people, and it benefits largely a tax industry centered in Washington. Has to do with tax lawyers, has to do with tax lobbyists, it has to do with this whole hidden shadow government that deals with the regulations, deals with the kinds of provisions that Don just read there on the foreign trust that apply to tiny numbers of people. But that system thrives under the kind of blanket of secrecy that works because of this complexity.
So what personal philosophy do you take at tax time? Do you try to keep to the letter of the law, or do you try to use the benefit of the doubt in your favor so you could pay a little bit less?
We have a very modest proposal that would actually solve this complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And get
you off the hook.
No. If you go to Washington at this time of the year, and you go into the Capitol, you can see this. IRS sends its people up to Capitol Hill this time every year, and they have an office in which they do the tax returns of members of Congress, both the House and Senate, because they obviously can't do their own tax returns even though they write the laws. So our proposal is that Congress enact a law that makes it mandatory for every member of Congress and every executive branch appointed official to do their own tax returns, and in fact makes it a criminal offense if they get advice from a tax accountant or tax lawyer And we feel very strongly if this law is enacted, the tax code really will be simplified.
Donald Bartlett and James Steele are investigative reporters with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Their new book is America, Who Really Pays the Taxes? They'll be back with us tomorrow to discuss tax inequities in the business world. This is Fresh Air.